If you have your Bibles, we will be in James this morning. We're back in James, continuing our study called The Battle. I got a new book on James, which is not going to be good for us, because now I just want to go back and start all over again, right? Like, I just want to start James from the beginning. A new book was given to me this week. It's been amazing, and I love what this author points out. He was a pastor for a long time and a professor too, but he points out about James, a thing that we've already seen, but I just love the way he describes it. He says that James is a spiritual director. That's what he's doing. I think that's great. Not too long ago, I made a deal with my wife. I guess it was a long time ago now. I was about 37, 38, and I made a deal with my wife when she was begging me to go to the doctor. If I make it to 40, I'll go to the doctor. I'll have a checkup at 40. That was the deal we made. 40 rolls around, and she remembered. So I roll into the doctor, and I see him, and there are things, and I need to come back. And so I go back to see this doctor and at 40, and then again, he wants me to come back at 41, and then 42 probably, and then 43. He wants me to come every year now all of a sudden. And I'm in his doctor's office one day, and he says to me, "Hey man, well, all your blood work looks good. Anything else I can do for you?" And I was like, "Hey man, you remember a while back when I had that test run?" He goes, "Yeah, I remember this on your chart. I don't remember it, but it's here, written down." And I said, Do we need to do anything about that?" He's like, "Oh yeah, we should probably do that again. It's been 3 years. We should probably go back and look again. I'll have somebody schedule that for you." And I was like, "Okay. Anything else I can do for you?" I'm like, what am I? Am I at McDonald's? Like, I'm just ordering off the menu? Like, what do you mean? He's like, "Well, what do you need?" I go, I need you to be proactive in my care. That's what I need you to do. I need you to go, "Hey, lose some weight. Stop eating like an idiot. Like, I need you to be proactive in my physical care. That's what I need from you." And the thing is that we've made so many advances in medical care these days. I just don't know that we've gotten much better at soul care, though. We need somebody to be proactive about our physical health. But I think what James is doing is he's showing us that we need somebody that's proactive about our spiritual health. Someone who speaks into our life, steps into our life and says, "You need to go this way. I'm concerned about you." And cares for us. And that's what James, I think, is doing. He is caring for our souls. He's writing to these people that he loves to guide them through life. And what I'm finding as I go through this, as I read through the book that I was given on James, and as I kind of reflected back on what we've already seen, what you see is that's what James has been doing the whole time. The problem is that James recognizes, and the Bible's great about this. The Bible, and James in particular, is really great at acknowledging that life is complex. Like, it's hard. Like, crazy situations come your way all the time. That's one of the things about being an adult that's not the best. One of the reasons that we long to be a child is we want simple questions about life like we had when we were a kid. A lot of us had when we were children. "Hey, you want the chocolate Oreos or the vanilla?" Oh. Life was hard then. Like, you wrestled with such questions, but now we wrestle with much greater questions that seem to have much greater impact. And James acknowledged that life is complex. And the thing is, what he gives us is, he gives us hard answers. Because the truth is that even though there's a lot of advice and counsel out there in the world, so much of it, I don't know if you noticed, is overly simplistic. 7 easy tips to whatever, reduce belly fat. Raise your children. Yeah, you only need 7 things to raise kids. That's it. Like, it's like life is just way more complicated than that. And what we are offered so often is overly simplistic answers to life's complicated problems. And James seems to be saying that there are no quick fixes, and easy answers actually make life harder. And what we need is not a quick fix, but we need an answer. He wants us, if you walk through what he's told us already, he wants us to examine our lives. He's asked us to examine our commitment to Christ by looking at what we do. But what he wants is, it seems to be to set us free. He doesn't want us burdened. He's trying to be a blessing in their lives. He wants to confront us with this truth, but he also wants to comfort us as we navigate life, which is hard. So we arrive at this amazing passage.
the end of chapter 3 of James, it says this. He's speaking of wisdom. He says this. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Oh, man. Okay, so what's happening here is James has just come out of this passage, this very kind of like, maybe not for you, but for me, this really brutal passage on the power of the tongue, right? And how untamable it is. And he's actually just, not only is it powerful, it's wild and uncontrollable. And it's uncontrollable because it's an outflowing, right? So the tongue is very powerful. He describes it as being able to start a fire, like a forest fire, like a spark that starts a forest fire. He describes it as a rudder that can guide an entire ship. He describes it as full of poison, and he describes it as deadly. And he says it's uncontrollable, and he comes out of it. But the reason it's uncontrollable, is that it's an outflow of what's inside of you. Right? You can't control your tongue because it's going to produce and say whatever's inside of you already. So the question when you get to the end of this section ought to be, well, if I can't control my tongue and it reveals what's inside of me, what do I do? And James brings us into this section on wisdom. And he starts with a pretty provocative question, right? Who is wise and understanding among you? Hey, who of you guys thinks you are wise and has understanding? He just opens up that way. It's a call to self-examination. James does this a lot. I want you to stop and examine yourselves. Are you wise and understanding? And then he's going to break down what he means by that. Wisdom is incredibly important to James. He goes on and on about it. He's been shaped, you can see, by the Proverbs, steeped in the wisdom of Proverbs, the writings and the sayings there. You hear him echoing them all the time. Not only that, in the wisdom sayings of Jesus. So often you hear him quoting the things that Jesus says in his wisdom teachings. So those two things have shaped him. So this idea of wisdom is incredibly important to James. He's already told us that we need to ask for it. If you don't have wisdom, ask for it, is what he said. You know why? Because you need it. He's asked for it if you don't have it. And he's brought the subject up again at this critical passage about the health of the church. It's incredibly important. And what he's talking about is that thing that helps you navigate life, right? The wisdom to navigate life in its complicated situations and all the things that arise. How do I get through and navigate these waters and these issues that come up? It's this wisdom is a skillful and careful application of knowledge. Does that make sense? Skillful and careful application of knowledge. I heard a story one time. I don't know if it's true or not. It doesn't matter. It still illustrates the truth. Professor told it in college. He said this. He said that there was a guy who was an engineer. He's a consulting engineer, chemical guy that knew thermodynamics. You know, it's not important, by heat. And he goes into this factory. This factory hires him and says, listen, we are incredibly inefficient. Our efficiency has gone down completely. We don't know what's going on. And the man walks into the factory and looks around and says, all of these exchangers, I want you to replace the ugly ones. And turns around and walks out. And they stop him and go, whoa, what do you mean the ugly ones? And he takes a piece of chalk out of his pocket and he goes through and he makes an X on all the ugly ones and leaves. He says, replace those. They replace them all. The deal that he had struck was that he would get 10% of whatever they saved the next year. They saved over $200,000 the next year because they replaced the pieces they told him. So he sends them a bill for 10% of that. And they turn around and send him an invoice back and say, could you please give us an itemized list of the cost, how you arrived at this number. And he said, sure, I'd be glad to. And he sends back piece of chalk, $1, knowing where to write X, $19,999. Yeah.
right? It's the wisdom. What he knew was that the ones that were ugly, the reason that they were ugly was because the paint was flaking off of them. They were inefficient. Any intro to thermodynamics student could have told you that the inefficiency produces heat, but the wisdom and experience knows the application when you see it in real life and is able to navigate those things. It's not just knowing a thing. It's when things happen in life, being able to navigate them. And this is what he wants for his people, because life, by the way, is complicated and difficult and hard. And joyous and fun and beautiful. And how do you navigate all of these things well? It's this application of knowledge, this wisdom that comes with experience. When problems arise, the wise know how to deal with it. And that's what he wants for them. And he says this, if you think you're wise, here's how you should know. He says this in verse 13, by his good conduct. Okay, so good conduct, excellent translation, not arguing with the translators. But there's a couple words for good, right? You could be good versus evil. That's not this word. You could be good in the sense of beautiful. That's this word. And conduct here, in some translations, is translated life. If you are wise, let me see it by your beautiful life, is what he says. In the beautiful life, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. That's amazing. Here's why this is amazing to me. Because wisdom is not just applied according to James. Wisdom is not just applied in these monumental moments in life, although you need it then. When these big things happen, great celebrations, great successes, new job, new career, amazing things, and you also need it when things happen very bad, when life is difficult and hard and waves crash against you, you need wisdom there. But James seems to be saying that wisdom is a thing that affects you every single day of your life, a thing that you need every single day, that wisdom will reveal itself in the way that you just navigate tomorrow. If you have wisdom, let me see it by your beautiful life and how wisdom reveals itself in meekness, the wisdom that comes from meekness, or the meekness that goes with wisdom. Wisdom is everywhere. The application of wisdom is everywhere, from nature. God's wisdom is applied in the beauty of nature. It is applied in art when someone takes a thing and crafts a word or a phrase just right to strike at your heart. I've heard a lyricist, a songwriter, say in four lines what I would try to say in a whole sermon, and it strike harder than if I had written a novel about it. Or a painting where someone looks at life and says, I need to express a thing in canvas. That is wisdom. That is applied knowledge to communicate a thing to other people. It's in art. It's in the boardroom. It's everywhere. And it's not just everywhere. It's for everybody. It's not just for people that are incredibly, like, at high levels. It's just as comfortable with the elite as it is in the everyday and commonplace. Wisdom is everywhere. It is in the daily life of those people that he's writing to. And he wants them to know that. It suits the commonplace and the exalted. You need wisdom to raise your children well. You need wisdom in your marriage. You need wisdom in your career. You need wisdom everywhere. You need wisdom all the time. And everywhere that you go, how do you navigate the choices and the decisions of life? And that's what he's saying. The wisdom that he's talking about results in a beautiful life that navigates these things beautifully. Can you imagine a situation? How different would your marriage be, or your relationship with your child be, if every time before you spoke, you asked this question, is this going to be wise or foolish? What I'm about to say, will it result in wisdom? Will it be evidence of wisdom, or will it be evidence of foolishness in my life? Before I open my mouth, if I evaluated the thing that I was about to say as foolish or wise, how much better would your marriage be? Or your life, or your career? That's what he wants us to do, is consider that wisdom is everywhere and all around us, that it's been given to us to navigate life in a certain way that he values, to skillfully do these things, and it works out in meekness. Here's an interesting thing about wisdom. You can be right and still foolish. You can be right and dumb, foolish about it. You can take knowledge and use it badly. And he says that the wisdom that he's talking about, this interesting phrase here,
13. But by his beautiful life, his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom, or in the wisdom which always bears the mark of meekness. Meekness is not weakness, by the way. Meekness is controlled or subdued gentleness. It is power under control is how it's been described, right? Imagine this. Imagine someone comes to you and says something like, LeBron is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And you say in your mind, rocking your Jordan 3s, we're about to have this conversation. And you are ready to pull out stats and statistics, and you are ready to argue as best you can why Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time and not LeBron James. You have so many facts. You have written an essay. You can destroy this person in this argument. And then you choose not to. Instead, you enter into a gentle conversation that's enjoyable for both of you. That's meekness. Meekness is even when you have the power and the knowledge, even when you can. I mean, for goodness sake, Jesus, who has the power over death and hell, was described as what? Meek. Moses, the great leader of Israel, he was described as what? Meek. Does that mean they were powerless or weak? No. There was plenty of power, but they knew how to use it well and control it. They didn't let their own selfish gain let it get out of control. This is the wisdom that I'm talking about. Even if you're right, it issues in your life in a certain way. You can be right and foolish, or you can. The meekness that comes with true wisdom affects your life in a powerful way and makes it beautiful. James's spiritual direction is that wisdom is a thing that we work out every single day, everywhere we are, and every single one of us need to do it. In the little decisions of life, and how you speak to the people around you, in your relationship with that coworker, all of the wisdom of God should issue forth. See, I tend to think, maybe it's just the culture I grew up in or the culture that we're in, that Christianity is reserved for these great moments of restraint. And James says the wisdom of God permeates every decision you make all day long, every day. Am I using my time well? It's wisdom. It takes wisdom to use your time well. Am I developing relationships that are wise? Am I loving people well? Am I doing all of the things that I'm supposed to do, that I've been called to do? I'm navigating all these things. Are you doing that every single day? Wisdom is being shaped inside of you. The wisdom that we ask for, God uses to mature us by us dealing with the wisdom of God in all the decisions that we make every single day of our life, all day long. James is calling us to examine those things and do that. But then he says this, verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast and be false to the truth. If you have in your hearts bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, you don't need to be proud about that. You also don't need to think that you've laid hold of the truth. If you have this in your heart, know that this is not the wisdom that comes from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Here's an interesting thing about wisdom, according to James. It's relational. He's just come out of speaking about the tongue and the damage the tongue can cause. What kind of damage can the tongue cause? I mean, it's not going to harm physical like objects like this pulpit. I could scream at this pulpit all day long. It will not care. It's not talking about things like that. He's clearly talking about the damage that happens in relationships. Wisdom has a relational component. How we execute the knowledge that we have impacts us in relationship with other people. And so we have to choose whether or not we're going to apply earthly wisdom to our life, or we're going to apply a biblical wisdom. And it's hard to tell sometimes, because earthly wisdom, it can be appealing. Right? Earthly wisdom can be so appealing. It makes so much sense. The temptation in the garden was an appeal to earthly wisdom. Why would God not want you to have a thing that is that beautiful? Why would God not want you to have a thing that can make you wise? Why would God not want you to have what will make you happy? It's an appeal to earthly wisdom. It's very appealing. And sometimes, let's just be clear, it overlaps sometimes with spiritualism. There are things that you will hear from earthly advice and earthly counsel that would also be, would align with a heavenly wisdom. There are things, I'm listening right now to an artist that I'd not listened to before. I read an article about him and decided to give it a listen. Not a believer, but his songs are confessional. Even this unbeliever knows and feels the need to confess. And I find it beautiful that I find the truth of the need for confession in the songs of this person who denies the divinity of Christ. But he's true. What he says is right. He doesn't understand why. But sometimes it'll overlap. It is spiritual wisdom that you should care for your body. Go to the doctor. He has wisdom for you sometimes. Sometimes you have to drag it out of him, but sometimes he has it. So there's a wisdom of the world, but it's always at some point going to fail you. You know who gave good advice one time, I thought? Peter. So Peter has said this amazing thing. He has identified Christ as the Son of God, the chosen one, the Messiah. And Jesus says, God has told this to you. It's unbelievable. And then Jesus goes on to say things like this. He says, you know what? Here's the deal, guys. I'm going to go and I'm going to be killed and die. And Peter goes to him and says, hey, man, you really ought not say things like that. Which sounds like solid advice if you're trying to get disciples, right? Hey, man, if you're trying to rack up disciples and convince the world that you are going to be king, how about not talking about being murdered? Solid advice. Jesus turns to him and says, get thee behind me, Satan. You don't know. You don't know. There's things that you can't even understand. You are using worldly wisdom, and there's a wisdom from above that is far greater. Your earthly wisdom, no matter how great it is, will fail you one day. And so we have to do that. We have to be aware of it. And he says this, earthly wisdom is all about you. Right? That's what it is. Earthly wisdom is about you. That's how you identify it. But if you have bitter jealousy, this antagonistic spirit of like self-concern and like selfish ambition, what can I get out of this? Whatever leads to like this divisiveness among us. When you have that type of thing going on, the first thing that gets sacrificed is the truth. When we are divisive and I see you on one side and me on the other, the first thing that we abandon is telling the truth. Because I have to win and you have to lose. I'll bend the truth, I'll twist the truth, I'll do whatever I have to say because I am here and you are there. I'm not interested in bringing us together, I'm interested in winning. And that is selfish ambition. And truth will be this one, that's the thing that suffers. Which is a problem for living your life well. And the result of this, he says it. Listen, if you do this, if you engage in what's an earthly wisdom that elevates yourself, whether you're right or wrong doesn't matter, but it's this thing that elevates yourself, the result is this. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, this is verse 16, there will be disorder in every kind of vile practice. There will be restlessness, instability, disturbance in the fellowship of people. There will be meanness in thought, word, and deed. All of these things will exist where your wisdom, the earthly wisdom, tells you to elevate yourself. And this is broken, he says. What you really need, and what America needs, what your relationships need, is a biblical wisdom. We know this. We know that James would have agreed with us. That it starts with the fear of the Lord. Psalm 111:10 says this. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All those who practice it have a good understanding. His praise endures forever. So somehow the fear of God, the acknowledgement of his great power and awe. We know that this is not just being scared of God. You know what? It also says this in Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. It says this again in Proverbs 2. Making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as a hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. The fear of the Lord can't just mean being scared of, because in Psalm 130, he says this really, really interesting thing. If you, O Lord, could mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But with you, there is forgiveness that you might be feared. A God
who is so powerful and so amazing that when he forgives, that we are just in awe of him, a reverence of this one who is as powerful. This is what he's talking about, a wisdom that starts here. And then he says this. This is what will be the evidence of that kind of wisdom. The wisdom from above, and this is verse 17, is first pure. There's no mixed motives in a wisdom from above. There's no mixed motives in God, and there will therefore be no mixed motives in the type of wisdom that is applied in relationships, of course. It will be pure. The motives will be genuine. It'll also be peaceable, gentle, open to reason. Can you hear how we need this in this country? Where are the peacemakers? They're not on Facebook, right? That's the place where you say a thing, and then there's somebody says another thing, and we're now in two camps, and there's nothing in between, and I only try to destroy you. Where are the peacemakers? Where's the wisdom that comes with the humility that reaches out with a desire to bring peace? It's not always easy. And there's never an abandoning of truth with that. There is a seeking of peaceful ground instead of the destruction of others. The wisdom that comes from God is like this. It is open to reason. I don't stand on dogma, but I'm willing to enter into conversation gently. Full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. The result is, verse 18, a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. There's a fruit, a life that bears the results of a righteousness, this being right with God. And there's this peace here, a lack of anxiety and an understanding of what the way the world works, an acceptance of no matter what comes, great or small, that we understand our place in it and how to navigate these things well. We are so divided. We must watch our words carefully. Christians must be the ones. If no one else does it, shouldn't it be mark of the Christian that we're the peacemaker? We never abandon truth. We never sacrifice truth, but we seek peace for the sake of our Savior. We know that we can be right and still foolish, but we should be right and stand on truth, but be wise, pursuing peace. We're so divided and we're also so isolated. There's a wisdom that says we destroy that. I'm very, very concerned. It's probably because I'm getting old, right? That's why I have to go to the doctor every year. I'm getting old now, older now, and I'm close to buying a pair of Velcro shoes and just being like, back in my day, I'm really close to that, right? But I'm growing concerned that how many people around you that you see at work go to work and go home and watch Netflix and they're going to just do that till they die. Like, doesn't that sound awful? Doesn't it sound terrible to not be in relationship? You were created for relationship. All of this truth about wisdom is grounded in the truth that the God that we serve is triune. He is Father, Son, and Spirit. At the very core of everything that existed is this God who in himself is one but is somehow also relational. So also loving, you were made that way in his image to be relational, and yet because it's hard, yet because it's difficult, yet because there's no peace, so often we just go home and we watch whatever we want. We don't even have to be in the same room now. Go take your iPad, go to the other room. We don't even have to, at least in my day, back when I was a kid, we had to watch whatever dad watched. You just had to suck it up and take it. Not anymore, man. Just grab your iPod and your iPhone and go in the other room. Watch something, whatever you want. It's the selfishness that we continue to drive on ourselves and the continued isolation that we have from one another that's killing us. And we're just going to watch Netflix and Facebook till we die? That's awful. We've been called to so much more. There's a wisdom that at the core of the universe that you are a relational being. And the wisdom that we have to live out, this is it. The wisdom that we have to live out is not just found in the beauty of the Trinity, but it's everywhere. It's the wisdom of the cross. This is only true because of the wisdom of the cross. This can, all the things that he's just said are only true. How do I apply the wisdom of the cross to my everyday life? The place where God brings together his justice and his mercy in a way that no one can see coming. Where justice, you get what you deserve, and mercy, you don't get what you deserve. How do those come together? Only on the cross. where what you deserve was poured out on the one who didn't deserve it? How do you apply that to raising your children? That's what we're talking about, working that out every single day. When I raise my child, I'm just throwing flashcards at him, telling him to do them faster. Is that wisdom? Or would I be happy if he grew up okay at flashcards, but was a God-honoring, Jesus-loving man? But the earthly wisdom says just be better at flashcards. Love Jesus. How do I do that? Am I teaching him to love Jesus? I got to figure out how to make him do both. The wisdom of the cross is foolishness to the world. There's overlap, yes. But at the core, it's foolishness. We have to figure out how to apply that I am a sinner, but I am so loved that God has entered into my suffering. To today. We have to figure out how to apply. James is calling us to apply that he died, not that I might not suffer, but that in my suffering I might become like him. To my relationship with my spouse and my coworker. To my relationship to my neighbor, the one that I don't know. That is the wisdom we wrestle with. That is the wisdom that shapes us. That is the wisdom that we are called to. James is saying that he's pointing out that we need a spiritual director. I hope you have one. But he's also saying that we need to be maturing into ones that can be spiritual directors. There is a severe shortage of spiritual directors in this world. We will come to trust Jesus. We will come to love Jesus. We will come to be wise in living as we submit in obedience to that. That is what we need. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for your goodness, for your wisdom, for the wisdom of the cross that is foolishness to the world. The wisdom of the cross how can it be that his death was of sin a double cure? Save me from wrath and made me whole. Why should what he has done count for me? It's too wonderful. The wisdom of the cross says that a man who died on the cross 2,000 years ago has set me free from bondage to just existing. From bondage to my passions, which I know to be deadly. From the bondage to the situations that my tongue gets me into. Give us wisdom to wrestle with this, to use our words to bring peace and not to build ourselves up. Change our hearts that we fall so in love with Jesus that we long to use our words in service of him in the kingdom. Make us more like him. Not passive, willing to speak hard things into people's lives, but with gentleness. No ulterior motives. Give us the courage to say hard things to one another out of love and with gentleness. And give us the words to build up. And just slam our mouths shut when bitterness is about to spill out, when jealousy and envy is about to come out. Slam our mouths shut that we might nurture the soil of peace so that relationships can grow. Make us more like Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.